Kevin Kincaid, but I don't even know who that is.
He's busy poo-pooing what we're talking about
today. Strenuously.
Kevin Kincaid's new friend, best friend, Mike Missinelli, had a Philadelphia Union jersey on and was talking soccer for about 10 minutes. I couldn't believe it.
It's always soccer on a Friday afternoon, and just like the 3-6 Mafia, we stay dough boy, dough the dough boy, fresh. Fresh with the Supporters Shield, first trophy in Philadelphia Union franchise history. But we're going to take we're going to veer from the path today because we've got a break before the playoffs resume. Playoffs, as Jim Mora once said. And we're going to talk about the radio business, and specifically why the Philadelphia Union can't get any business on the radio, even after winning their first trophy. We had a little bit of a episode of Mike Missinelli on Thursday, and we're going to talk about all of the things radio related as they as pertaining to the Philadelphia Union. So joining me is a friend of the program. He hasn't been on before, but I thought he would be perfect to have on this episode to explain exactly what the hell is going on here. It's Eitan Shander.
Fucking Kincaid.
Thanks for coming on, man.
When you think of Shander in Philadelphia, you think of soccer. I understand. I mean, it's long time overdue that we haven't done this.
That's right. I know you do 100 different things. You do The Middle, which is a new show with Harry Mays and Barrett Brooks on Philly Voice and YouTube. That's daily, Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. You've got What Are the Odds on Fox Sports, The Gambler. You have TV appearances on Fox 29. Did I get everything? Did I miss any of them?
Props and Locks is the big one now. Yeah.
Props and Locks.
Yeah. Thursday night, me, Sean Bell, Scott Grayson, 7 o'clock live on Fox 29. And we lead you right into Thursday night football. So it's awesome because Fox Bet, it's their show. So it's a full on betting program. And Sean gives a lot of analysis. And then I come in and I just throw you some props and some lines and some stuff to think about. And it's awesome because it's meant to be more of a conversational show. So.
So you've done everything, and you currently are doing everything. Did you ever be on a Philadelphia Union podcast?
Well, here's the thing. I would not put it outside the realm of possibility because you're involved. So if I knew that element was available, then who the hell knows what I would be doing if you were involved? Because let's not sell yourself short here, Kev. You are the Shander of Crossing Broad. I don't think anybody else writes for that site anymore, do they?
Now we're very busy Bobby, growing the business.
Is he still around?
Yeah, he's doing business stuff, you know, gambling and affiliate links. It's actually a very lucrative business. I don't think most people even know really what's going on with that, but we're doing well on the business side. And so I'm happy
to
carry the content load, if you know what I mean. So let me kind of set the stage here. This is Friday. We're recording on Friday. On Thursday, we had Philadelphia Union fans accidentally kind of back-ended into blowing up Mike Missinelli's show, the final hour of the show. I just want everybody to know, this is not a bitch session. Like, I'm not bringing Eitan used to work at 97.5. I'm not bringing him on here. We're not going to, like, rag Mike. We're not going to, like, dump on the guy. We're not throwing anybody on the bus. This is not what that is. This is an educational session because I think a lot of people were complaining to Mike and saying, well, why don't you talk about the Union? Why can't we get any radio coverage? They're the best team in town right now. That's a fact. They actually won something. The other teams kind of stink right now. So if you're not going to talk about us now, then why, is there ever a chance? You know, so what happened was I was actually on with Mike to talk about something else. We were arguing about the Brett Favre, Doug Peterson, Nick Foles non-story nothing burger, right? And I shouted out the Union afterwards. Mike, unrelated earlier in the day, said, you know, the Union are never going to light up the phone lines. So I shared the number and I said, well, let's light up the phone lines, right? And he got like 5 Philadelphia Union calls or something like that. And he just explained to them, like, look, it's small fish in a big pond. You know, it's the Eagles. You know, we play the hits. This is what we do on the radio. So, Eitan, explain to the Philadelphia Union fans what our standing is in the city when it comes to sports talk radio.
Okay, so before I specifically discuss that, I think it is worth mentioning, and probably a couple of times over, because if this isn't the audience to do it, I don't know what would be, which is you do have a radio home in this city. And that is Fox Sports Radio, The Gambler. And I will credit Sean Brace because he has been so active. Now, on the flip side, it's Chris Albright. It's the team understanding the value there. They're down there. Sean has been connected with the Union, as you know, for a long time. So he's able to bring that together. And look, I get it. It's not the Fanatic. It's not IP. We'll talk about that in a second. But this is not simply just airing the games. Joe Tanzi, Sean Brace, they do a fantastic job. The pre-games, leading up, their daily discussions. Jim Curtin is on once a week. This is a fully immersed topic. And if you look at it, there's not that much of a gambling element that's played to it. So if there's one thing that we stretch away from, as far as, you know, hard, heavy lines and things like that, it's just good union talk. And of course, you get the games on the radio as well. So yes, it's a plug, but at the same time, Kevin, I think it's worth mentioning that there are people here, and this is iHeartRadio, there are people here in this city who do recognize that even if it is a small fish in a bigger pond, there's value in rewarding fans and people like yourself who continue to put out content specifically for the game and for the union fans, as well as the radio on Fox Sports Radio, The Gambler. Across the board, there are people that recognize that there are plenty of people and fans in this city that make up that small fish. So I just wanted to recognize that first. Now, as far as what's going on in the city, let me zoom out and kind of present what's happening here. For a long time in this city, you've had two radio stations combating, going back and forth. Very rare has it been where one slot outside of the afternoon drive on 97.5 has come even close to beating the other station. And even now, as we see, John and Ike are doing a really good job competing, going back and forth with Mike's show. And you know what? To be honest, that should elevate it, right? The fact that you have competition. Josh was here for a little bit. A lot of people jumped on that. New shows get a spike. His lasted a little longer. And that's a credit to him. But the reality is that, and we cover sports. We have to look at this from our own perspective, our own point of view, is that we've had two radio stations where one, as you know, has been in such a commanding lead, especially in morning drive and really throughout the day outside of that one small spot, where there is no pressure on them to divert. There is no pressure on them to move away from what they're doing, because whatever net that they're casting with the Eagles, whatever net that they're casting with the teams they broadcast, like the Phillies, and I'd argue as a listener of IP that they talk way too much Phillies. They carry the games.
Right.
There it is. Same thing. So my point of it is that the net has been cast, specifically the ratings are returned. The other station, which I was there for years and a lot of loyalty and lived and died at that place, the other station is so far away that by diverting away from what's working for the other station in front of you, you run such a risk of getting pushed back even further. If you're getting doubled, you run a risk of getting quadrupled. Nobody can survive. Sam Hinkie couldn't survive like that. So the job risk from programmers down to what you talk about, it's basically like, well, let's mirror, let's copy as much as we can what the station up front is doing. And just look at it like a music station. If you're playing the hits, is that what you got from Mike, right?
Yep.
Hey, we're playing the hits, we're playing the hits. Well, what station is going deep cuts? What station that's playing the hits right now on the afternoon drive when you're driving home from work from a music standpoint is all deep cuts, deep tracks?
Nobody.
That's the issue.
WMMR, I think I've heard them play Jane's Addiction for 30 years and Van Halen. Philly is such a parochial town when it comes to all that stuff. It kind of bleeds into our media, doesn't it?
It does. It absolutely does. And I think what's happened is there's been an establishment, and you can blame or credit, depending on what you want, people like Angelo Cataldi and Howard Eskin, who have been here for so long and have cultivated this conversation of Eagles, Eagles. And to be fair, as you know, who've worked and won an Emmy in television, a lot of it, especially early on, yes, sir, is about coaching and direction. And somebody coming in and saying, hey, it could be Tom Bigby sitting somebody down saying, now, son, you're going to talk about the Eagles because the Eagles rate. And all of a sudden, in the 80s to the 90s, teams like the Phillies and the Flyers get phased out. So now, fast forward, you have a station that won't take a risk, and you have a station that's in front of them with a big, pretty big gap that doesn't need to take a risk. So Flyers fans, Union fans, we find ourselves throughout on radio trying to just cast the wide net. But here's where I think there's some hypocrisy that steps in. And I know cut in whenever I'm going too long, please.
No, it's all right.
Here's where I think the hypocrisy is. Twofold. One, the best radio is not caller-driven, but that, again, goes back to what's been cultivated, trying to entice people to call with lists.
And that's a very specifically Philadelphia thing. You go elsewhere in North America, you don't hear phone calls the way you hear them in Philly.
There are stations, Miami, for example, there are stations in big markets that just don't take calls. Don't. Right. And that is a huge element of it, because callers, with the data that we have, callers at best represent 6 to 7% of your show at best. And that's like a good amount of who's listening. 6 to 7%. So what's happened is the rest, the 93%, and this is to your point, Kev, about where we are, how much it's been ingrained in us, the 93%, there's a lot of people now that are ingrained, that's just in their brain now over and over again to seek out that 7%. Oh, I can't wait to hear what Wade from Chester has to say about, you know, firing Doug Peterson and trading Carson Wentz today. It's craziness, right?
Yeah,
but it's all wrapped in. Now, this is where I think the hypocrisy is. And it's not a rip on anybody specific. In fact, I think there are a lot of talented people on both stations that could carry this conversation. But
agreed.
A host-driven radio program that's not relying upon people reacting to you right away, that instant retweet-like reaction, is able to talk about something where even if you don't know about it, you can open up a conversation. And look, we have plenty of opportunity for people to talk about it on Twitter, even if you do open up the phone lines, things along those lines. But it doesn't have to be an educated conversation to the point at which you're breaking the game down. Because look, how often do you hear full-on shows in Philadelphia sports radio breaking X's and O's down in a game? If
no.
it's ever used, it's used to a point about why Nick Foles is better than Carson Wentz or something. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, or here's how many times that Carson Wentz was pressured when he threw an interception or threw the ball away or something like that. You know,
correct.
It's, let me hold that thought for a sec, because I just want to before I like, because I got a bunch of responses. I don't want to lose any of them. No, it's all right.
You got me fired up already.
No, it's all good. I think what Sean and Joe are doing is great. I find myself ended up listening to Sean every day, and I think there's part of this is that people are probably sitting at home thinking like, well, who the fuck cares? Like, I got this podcast. We got Always Soccer. We got what Sean and Joe are doing on The Gambler. We have Sons of Ben podcast, all these great independent media outlets, right? Why the fuck do we care about being on 97.5 or being on WIP? But it's like, you see those two as the legacy stations that have been here for a while. And it's like, it's a legitimacy. Like, it's saying like, we want to be included, you know, like we want what we don't have. We love what Sean's doing. We validation. We love what Sean's doing. We love what Kevin's doing with Always Soccer. We love what Sons of Ben podcast is doing, but we feel like we deserve to be at the table with everybody else, right? We deserve to be at the big boys table. The interesting thing is that we're really, really, I think what it is from a business perspective, and the whole Nielsen thing is another, a thing in itself, how the ratings work. But really, it's a question of, I think people say, because Mike and other people will say, well, if we talk soccer, then other people, Eagles fans, are going to turn off the radio. Right.
That's going back to playing the hits versus
playing the hits. And people, and I think the explanation has always been, and I always use the example, like, look, you're doing a show that's 4 hours long, right? Surely there's enough time to play Van Halen and Pearl Jam, right? You don't just have to play Van Halen, although I would listen to that show if that's what they did. But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's this conundrum of thinking like, well, if we include the Union, which is a minority team, and if we include the Flyers, which is a minority team, are the majority Eagles fans going to tune out? So you look at it as like a singular collective majority of Eagles fans versus smaller minorities of Phillies, Union, and Flyers fans, and does the grouping of the minority fan bases make up for the loss, the potential loss of the one big majority? You know, I'm like making circles with my hands, and you know, mathematically, you can look at it a bunch of different ways, but the programmers in this town have decided that the Eagles pay the bills and they don't want to risk upsetting that, you know? And I respect that from a business perspective. I worked at Eyewitness News for 7 years. Like, I get it. Crossing broad, Eagles stories do better than anything else, mostly. But I guess we've never really tried it, have we? We've never really tried to do a show, a Philadelphia sports radio show that includes everybody. I don't even know if the experiment has really been there. Is the data even there to suggest that doing it one way is better than doing it another way?
Not so much, at least not as concrete as we think. And again, to use a parallel here, think about where you had a guy, Jason Martinez, who was hosting a daily show, and rightfully so because he's connected and works for the Flyers, was able to brand himself as the hockey guy. Now, this goes back to when he was producing with Mike, and you had some of those heated conversations.
Right.
Fast forward. Now, think about this. It's like, fast forward, we're still having these ridiculous conversations. And this is where I think it goes back to not being host-driven. A host-driven program forces the host to do work, forces the host to come prepared. You don't need to break down who's coming off the bench in a sub at the 89th minute. But you know what you don't need to do as well? You don't need to have the same old tired-ass conversation of, will soccer ever be the number two sport in the country? Or why would we talk about
every four years when there's nothing going on in the summer and the World Cup is on, you know, we get our like one day on the radio where they ask the same, because it's the same Dan Shaughnessy column that he's been writing for 40 years at the Boston Globe, that's, you know, exactly, will soccer right. ever make it? Yeah.
It's amazing. But that's where we are, where unfortunately it's not even about talking. And again, there's no nuance, right? There's no middle ground. There's no gray area. There's nothing to work and navigate through. And I understand that. That's the world that we live in. But my goodness, there has to be some sort of middle ground. And this goes back to the host. This goes back to the host just caring about what's happening around the city, understanding that it's on you now as the host to be able to communicate why. Because here's the thing, and this is what I've learned, and it's the best host that we've had in the city. Love him or hate him, and I know at times we disagree on him. At times I agree on him. But there are people like Cataldi. I was fortunate enough to work very closely with Michael Smirkanish, and I'm grateful for that opportunity. Anthony is another guy. Anthony Gargano is another one, right? Where if you are able to sell to the audience, first off, the audience has to feel and understand that you're a compelling individual.
Right.
And all of them are in their own different rights, right? You put them in a room together, God knows what would happen.
Yeah, yeah.
But what they've done, Kev, what they've done is, respectively, they've convinced their audience, and rightfully so, that they are compelling in their own right. Now, what's happened is, it's on them and any other host who's been able to connect with their audience to then bring up something that is outside of the Eagles blinders and say, hey, everybody, this is why I think this is compelling. Because you know what? All of a sudden that net begins to widen a little bit where it's somebody who's been with you for 5 years, who's been listening to your show every day for the past 6 months, who's new to your program and hated you for the first 3 or 4 days, but now loves you, who's all of a sudden, if they're going to take your recommendation for some stupid show on the E! Network, I guarantee you that they're going to take your recommendation for a soccer game.
Right. You know, it's interesting because we get into this conundrum. This is very specifically Philadelphia. Like, I wouldn't even raise this point if I was in like Vancouver or Toronto or something like that. But it's this kind of like chicken and egg thing when it comes to sports talk radio that's caller driven. Right. So what Mike will say, and what other people will say too, it's not just a Mike thing, but he'll say, well, we don't talk about the Flyers because nobody calls in to talk about the Flyers. But you could say, well, nobody's calling in because he's not talking about it. Right. So it's like, what came first? The chicken or the egg, you know?
Let me ask you a quick question on that. And I'm not asking you to name anybody because it's not about ripping anybody at all. And you can include me in this because I host 3 days a week on The Gambler. But of the percentage of people that are hosting minimum 3 days a week, Monday through Monday, how many people do you think can do 3 hour shows, 4 hour shows with maybe one call an hour?
Maybe like one person, two people in this city. Yeah.
Okay.
That's not a lot.
That's a major factor in what hosts are going to talk about, because now all of a sudden it's like, whoa, I'm out on an island. Not only do I not know what I'm talking about from the sport element, but I don't have anybody out there saving me and throwing me around.
Right, and this is another issue entirely where I get mad personally, because you know I came up through the ranks as a producer.
Yep.
You know, I was a producer and a writer for a long time, but before I was a columnist and whatever the fuck I'm doing now. But I feel like a lot of sports radio in this town is underproduced to the fact where it's like we're just going to crutch and lean off of phone calls, and we can come in kind of less prepared than you would at any other city, any other market, because we know that people are just going to call in and they're going to feed the content at the same time. So I don't have to do as much preparation with that, because I know I can just go 610-632 and then we got a bunch of people who want to talk about Foles, right?
Yeah, I can say that there are a lot of areas, there are a lot of spotty areas throughout the day on shows that are simply people running a board and most likely getting paid as a reflection of that.
Yeah. You know, that's not me being critical of any of these people in a way. It's just kind of the nature of what it is. Like, I think there's a lot of talented producers in this town. I just think the nature of kind of what we've fallen into as a market and how we do radio in this market just results in the production being what it is. You know, it's not that people aren't talented or don't know what they're doing, but they're not really given the license or given the freedom to produce a more complex or interesting show in the way they want to.
Absolutely right. No, I think you're absolutely right. I think that there are elements to a show that you see people are able to really influence. And if you go across the board, across all stations, you'll find that. And then you'll just find people that are bound by restrictions. But you're right. There are talented people. Look, just because somebody is relegated to running a board doesn't mean that they're not a great producer or have great ideas.
Right.
It's kind of like you're forced into that little corner.
So I don't want to get too far into the weeds in this because it's a really complicated topic, but I think people need to understand how the ratings work in order to really truly grasp what we're talking about here. So for people who don't know, radio ratings are done. Well, there's two different things now. Now we have streaming data, which we can collect, which gives us a much better viewpoint of how many people are listening and just gives us a better idea, more data that we're collecting, right? But right. Radio ratings have historically been collected by Nielsen through what we call a PPM, which is a portable people meter. And it's exactly what it's exactly what it sounds like. It's like a little beeper you attach to you walk around with. It's tuned to your radio, and then it transmits the data to Nielsen, and it says, this is what Bobby from Mayfair was listening to at 1 o'clock.
Arbitrary.
So it's archaic, it's outdated. There's better technology that's available, but for reasons that I think are pretty obvious, there's no real incentive to upgrade that right now because it works for both sides. Nielsen gets money. You have to pay for the Nielsen ratings, and then WIP and 97.5 get to work off a format that helps them. And a lot of times advertising revenue rates are set based off Nielsen PPM data, right? You follow me, camera guy? All right. So
you're making perfect sense.
Right. Okay.
What happened to that guy, by the way?
I don't know.
Did he get arrested?
The ShamWow guy. I think he did. Yeah, he got in a fight. There was like a mugshot of him where he had like a black eye or something.
Right? Okay.
I'll have to like put that up. I'll have to find that. We'll have to put that into the next thing.
He's a fellow countryman of mine. Shlomo. Isn't that his name?
I think so. Yeah, yeah.
He's Israeli.
You learn something new every day, man. I'll tell you what. So listen, a quick story about that. Because the sample size of portable people meters is very small. When I worked in television at Eyewitness News, there were something like 900 households that had a set-top box that transmitted data to Nielsen, right? So if you knew where those people were, you knew who were part of that program, we could send a bunch of news trucks to Schwenksville and like pique their interest and then maybe get them to tune in. So the point being, I'm going to tell two stories real quick and then you can react to these. I don't think I've ever told these stories before. Guy at WIP, who I was really close with, once told me that Angelo Cattotti came in second place in the morning with 14 meters. 14 meters, because there's just not a lot of people who are in the program. Yep. Like, it's just a very small sample size. So Preston and Steve win all the time. They're like a behemoth. They're like a juggernaut. You can't touch them. Angela usually comes in number two. But another story is that WOGL and B101 are both owned by Entercom. And there was a little fluctuation in the ratings between WOGL and B101. And an advertiser once said, hey, what happened to our ratings at WOGL? And they looked into it and they found out that one person who was a WOGL listener left the PPM program and was replaced by somebody who was a B101 listener.
Yep.
So literally one person exited the program, one person entered the program, and that was enough to cause a ripple where an advertiser said, what the hell's going on here?
Sounds like a state Senate race.
Yeah, right,
people
right.
Just getting swapped out and all of a sudden it's like, what the hell just happened here? No, you're right. It's craziness.
Those are two examples of
it's that fine of a line though.
Yes.
Because these beepers, you mentioned 14 beepers. There probably were 18 to maybe 20 beepers total handed out during that ratings period.
Right.
So if you are fortunate enough, and this goes back to before we had the Gambler having the two stations that were covering sports, you figure, well, it's a big city, a lot of people around. Well, where are we strongest in? Well, let's say the Fanatic is strongest in Delco, in certain area, Ridley Park. Is where the Fanatic is through the roof. I'm just arbitrary, right?
Yeah.
And now they get 3 meters. All of a sudden, they're 3 meters in and around Ridley Park. Guess what? They're going to go through the roof.
Yeah.
And then those ratings are reflective of that. So yeah, a lot of it is just where you get these beepers, but even still, they're one in what? 1,000 or something along those lines.
It's a least. Very small ratio.
Even, probably even bigger than that. Like,
yeah, because we've got something, you know, Philly, when I talk about the 900 households on TV, Philly was like a, back then was like a city of like 2 million, a region of 2 million people. We call it a DMA, a designated market area, right? There's like 200 of them in the country. And yep. Philly was ranked number 4. We had 2 million households. We only had like 900 participating in the program. So to tie it into the Philadelphia Union, Mike is right when he says that, like, if we lose like one or two or three Eagles fans who are wearing meters, that's enough to make a significant dip in the archaic ratings, you know? So we laugh at it. It's like, well, who cares if like 2 or 3 or 4 Eagles fans turn off the radio because you're talking about the Philadelphia Union? Well, sometimes that's like make or break between whether you're first place, second place, third place, fourth place, you know?
Yeah. So here's the chicken and egg thing that we go back to. It's only really relevant for him. Because he's the only show, and again, it's no knock, it's just that's what the data says. He's the only show that's truly competing with the other stations.
With WIP, right.
Correct.
Right.
So if you're looking at a specific men, 25-54, 18-34, those two big demos are what the Fanatic and WIP and, you know, to a lesser extent, the Gambler, because they're working on building up revenue, which is a great strategy right now because it's not about stepping in and trying to outrate Angelo Cataldi in the morning. It's trying to build a brand that you can sell, which they're doing. But as far as the other stations, you're looking at more of a reflection, especially of one show who's saying, well I can't afford to take any risks. Mm-hmm. In fact, if anybody at that station who is losing has a point, it would be Mike, because he is either neck and neck winning at points or losing very, you know, to a narrow extent.
Right.
Other people don't really have that excuse. And here's why, because it's a chicken and the egg. And it goes back to, well, you're doing exactly, you and I are in a race and you are, you know, 2 leagues, I think they call it, right, ahead of me. And I'm doing exactly what you're doing and I can't break it. What do I do? Do I try something drastic and realize that I might be able to get a little boost? Or do I stay the course knowing that at some point I'm going to catch you? But it's like nothing ever narrows and nobody ever steps away. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean that you have to talk union every single day or have a union segment or something along those lines. But if you start to condition your audience that, hey, you're going to get Eagles, an Eagles-centric show, but all of a sudden other stuff can pop up. That's right. Where I think you start to create your own freedom, which is you don't know what's going to happen today. Oh, well, what's hot? Hey. Philadelphia Union just had a pretty big moment in their 11-year history. It's probably worth mentioning and discussing. Well, we've set the precedent that we can do that with the Flyers. We can do that with the Union. Mm-hmm. We can do that with Villanova. We can do that with football, college football, SEC football, or Penn State.
Yeah. Okay, I only got 2 more for you because I don't want to keep you forever.
That's fine, man. You've done so much. Like, you've stayed on with me much longer. I feel guilty saying I have to go anywhere.
That's right. I will. I'll take you up on that then. You know Chris Albright and Ben Olsen, so what's up with that?
So my buddy Colin McDonough from Gettysburg College, he local Philadelphian, born and raised, and I went to Gettysburg and just got to know him like a bunch of other Eagles fans here, and come back. And just through hanging out and friends, get to know that he's longtime buddies, grew up with Chris Albright. So at that point, it's like, well, Albright comes, hangs out at Gettysburg. And I remember I had to drop him off somewhere at, I think it was the train station in Frederick, something like that. And this is when he signed with the Galaxy. And
this is a long time ago. Yeah.
Pretty big deal. Now, let me just say this. Albright and Olsen, Benny and Chris, are two of the most genuine human beings. And you know I don't throw that around a lot because I need to keep people that will come back and say, oh, yeah, at least I know him. They're awesome individuals. Like, they're great dudes.
They are.
And I'm so thrilled for both of them succeeding. But it's crazy because, you know, here's Olsen. He's like, ah, just, you know, you can rock it. I'm like, really? I could spin it around the block? He's like, yeah. So I think we're seniors in college at this point. And I'm like, all right, man. So, you know, driving back, and I just spun it around Gettysburg for like, I don't know, 2 hours, just stopping everywhere. You know, it was brand new Beamer and stuff. And he was just so cool like that. Olsen, and then they were down in D.C., so we started to go down there after college or right there towards the end of it, and then right after school, a couple of our buddies were down in D.C., and everybody was hanging out because Chris and Ben were playing for the United. So at that point, it was awesome because we'd go down and just hang out and just go out. And again, yeah, it was like one of these things where you're hanging with these dudes and they're very open and generous and cool. And, you know, next thing you know, it's just, I got to see DC to the point then where I moved down there. I was like, all right, I'm moving. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, it was basically like, you know, I got to oversee some practices, got over to see Freddie Adu couple of times. Remember that?
Yeah, Philadelphia Union would later go on to play for the Philadelphia.
Sure. I'm going back to DC United.
Yeah, to DC United originally.
When he was a kid, and listen, he was doing some fun stuff in practice, and I just remember one day Benny was looking up at us like, dude, this kid, because he was older, you know, Ben and Chris were older at the time. He's like, yeah, this kid is something else. But it was fun, man, because they were never like MLS players, soccer players out. Mm-hmm. They're always like dudes. They're always just like, you know,
just normal, regular dudes. Yeah. And that's always why I loved covering it. And it's not, you know, this is not a slight against like Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid or any of those guys that I cover now or that I'm around now or I used to be before COVID, but it's just not the same, you know, like the MLS players are so down to earth because they didn't make a ton of money. You know, they made the same money that we did, you know, and they were driving the same cars that we were living in the same, well, not him, right, but other, like Ray Gaddis was back in 2012. But last question for you is not even really much of a question. It's just, I'm always curious in the perspective of, you know, we have non-soccer people on every so often, and you as somebody who's obviously like mostly talks about the quote-unquote four major sports on the radio and whatnot.
Right.
I'm just curious as to what you think of where the Union are now and how they're doing it with the academy and just the success they've had in recent years. I mean, when we started this podcast 4 years ago, they were a complete joke.
Yep.
And now they are quite easily the best run team in the city, which is amazing to me to consider. But I'm just curious your perspective. I mean, what you see from where you are.
No, I think you're right. I think that it's nothing, and as you know, it doesn't matter what the sport is, and the Union just did that this year. There's nothing like rewarding fans after going through a rough period. And I think what's happened is you've seen that corner turn, and I think that it's anyone from Sons of Ben, from people that have been there forever to people that have just started to get into it, to people that should and just maybe hear the podcast or they see it retweeted into their timeline and start to get into it, or just the matter of the sport itself in this country growing. I think now when you look at the individual success that this team has this year, right, the way in which they've built it, not having to go out and making these ridiculous signings. And as you mentioned, best run team in the city, and, you know, Albright, that front office, they've recognized finding value, and it's difficult. You know, that doesn't happen. You've got superstars in the NBA, whether or not you like it, based on the level of success you want to have a team go. And the Flyers, that stuff just always flies under the radar. Superstars always get ridiculously ripped anyway, if you want to call Giroux one of those, you know, as far as the level of scrutiny. And in this point, I think with the Union, what they've done is they've built a reputation. And I think that's probably the best thing that you can take away, is there's been a thank you. Thank you for sticking with us, to people that have been there for 11 years. There's been a reputation now that's been built up for people that are maybe straddling the line of interest. And there are people that might just listen to a Jim Curtin interview with Sean Brace and say, wow, this dude is pretty cool. He's talking about Eagles stuff. He's talking about a bunch of different things. He's a cool dude. I want to know more about him. I want to root for him. There's now a reputation, and unfortunately, we are superficial in this city, and it's hard to – you can't sell Temple football to somebody who doesn't know Temple football. Oh, man, you just wait, Kev. You just got to watch this football team. All of a sudden, you start to sell the Union.
Yeah.
They're the best team in the MLS. They have an insane fan base, and it's an awesome time if you're able to get down to Chester in the first place. But even more than that, the team is winning, and it's respectable. So I think all of that – factors in on
it. Well, and they're doing it with homegrown kids too, who are blue collar, and they come from New Philadelphia.
Oh, look at that.
As we like to call it.
Hey, so let me ask you this. What's put this on a list as far as from most to least ridiculous.
Okay.
Was it the trade Ben Simmons for James Harden? Was it the Jersey Gate with Chris Heck? Or was it the Wentz Foles Favre Gate? That all three dominated at some point the radio this weekend.
The bye week, dude. The bye week just fucking kills me every year.
It's like we are incapable of talking about sports unless there are sports on television.
I like to think that one of my specialties with Crossing Broad, because we try to do things that other people aren't doing, you know, to the point where it just gets goofy and ridiculous. I like to think one of my strengths is like coming up with stuff when there's absolutely nothing else to fucking talk about.
Yeah.
But
I'll give you that.
I will go in backwards order as to how you presented them. The most ridiculous one of the week was the Brett Favre non-story. Number two was the Boathouse Row, where it turned into like conversations about race relations and gentrification, based on like Boathouse Row being white and privilege or whatever the hell that was all about. And then number three would be Simmons for Harden, which in any normal week would have dominated, you know, the airwaves. But no, it was just crazy. Yeah. No, I mean, not to rehash the whole Brett Favre thing.
I'm not asking you.
I think it's funny. Like what I was arguing with Mike about was like, you know, it's always trying to make something. It's like, why does he have to answer in a way that suits us? You know, like, well, he didn't answer the question the right way. Well, what is the right way to answer the question? There is no right way. There's no arbitrary, you know, set of rules that you're beholden to. Like, it's not, he doesn't have to like answer in the way that the media needs him to answer. That doesn't fucking matter. It's a nothing burger. It's like a piece of bread, another piece of bread, and there's nothing else there. You know, unlike the Always Soccer in Philadelphia podcast, which is juicy and full of meat and tomato and lettuce and good content to chew on.
Right.
Eitan Shander.
Burger, not one of those fake burgers.
Not the Impossible Whopper. Not
which is probably good. Do you know the difference? I gave you an Impossible. It's Burger King. It's going to taste like it's going to smell like Burger King and taste like Burger King.
It's going to taste like it was char in there. You can put anything on that and then charbroil it or do whatever they do. Then it'll probably taste the same exact way.
It's the same grill, or I don't know which one microwaves, right? But McDonald's does. All right.
Listen, this is good, you know, charbroiled burger conversation. You wouldn't get this on any other Philadelphia Union podcast. Eitan Shander, follow him on Twitter at Shander Show. He's on the middle with Harry Mays and Barrett Brooks, 11 a.m. weekdays on Philly Voice and YouTube. What are the odds on Fox Sports The Gambler? Props and locks as well, and TV on Fox 29. That's the four of them. Did I miss anything?
Well, Fox and 29 is props and locks.
It is props and locks, yeah, but are you still doing like the morning hits on
day
two? Okay, so technically that's two different things.
Correct. Yeah, we actually have a segment this Sunday on game day. So check that out. Yeah.
Okay.
Eitan Shander is becoming big.
There you go. I love it. Eitan Shander, now a friend of the program after making his debut. Thanks for coming on and telling us about the industry. We appreciate it. All right, brother. Okay, let's see what you got for me in the way of questions, comments, and concerns. I also asked if you would be interested in sharing your favorite track from the Illmatic album, which is probably my number two or number three hip-hop album of all time. I think you would have to say... I think my favorite hip-hop album is Liquid Swords. And then I think It's Dark and Hell is Hot would probably be number two with Illmatic, like a 2A, 2B, something like that. They're all great. You can't go wrong. Michael N., he says his favorite track from Illmatic was New York State of Mind. Can't go wrong with that, man. Actually, let's play it right here. How about we play it? Okay, this is from Union Hulk. He says, Kevin Dino, do you remember when the Philadelphia Union won the league? We're fancy as shit now, and all Union fans can now eat peanuts by throwing one in at a time, the fancy way. We get the Medford Messi money soon. How do we spend it? Do we get fancier? Do we get any fancier dupe? Fans, stop eating tuna from the can? Well, that's a great question, Hulk. What do they do with the Brendan Aaronson money? You know, it's interesting because Taylor Twellman came out after we did the after Russ and I did the podcast and after the one with Brian Sciarretta, and he said it was going to be closer to $8 million or $9 million, or the fee was like $6 million, and then the incentives were probably going to get them up to $8 million or $9 million. That's fantastic money. Invest, put some more money into the academy. I don't know. Pave the parking lots. Put some more into the facilities. It's awesome. You could do a bunch of different things with it. I don't know. You tell me. I would do everything with that. I'd get a I get a weight set for my weight room down in the basement. I'd put an elliptical down there. No treadmill though, because I can't. I need low impact because my knees are busted. Shane Lorch says it looks like at least four new homegrown signings by January 1st. Yeah, they made a couple more today or yesterday, I think. What roster spots do we think they take? Are vets like Colin and Craval going to replace by those 16 to 18 year olds? And he says, One Love is my favorite song on Illmatic. Yeah, I mean, I think you would. Craval, Colin. I mean, think about Aurelian Colin for a second. So here's a guy who won pretty much everything with Kansas City, won the league, won the Open Cup. He's your fourth center back, you know? Even if they got down to a situation where they had to go with, like, Glesnes and Colin or Elliott and Colin or Mark McKenzie and Colin, yeah, I still would have felt comfortable with that. Like, he's got his adventurous moments, as we all saw last year. But imagine having a guy like that as your fourth center back. I think they probably move on from Aurelian, probably move on from Warren, right? Two young guys come in and replace him there. Maybe Kai Wagner's gone. I don't know where that rumor came from. Anybody tell me where that rumor came from that Kai Wagner might be moving on? Maybe Sergio Santos is transferred somewhere. I'm not really sure. There'll be spots that open up. There'll be spots that open up. Jim Curtin Burner says, looking at next season, we'll have three competitions to compete in. Yep. Champions League, the league, US Open Cup. What should be the top priority and what positions do we need to reinforce? Well, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves here, aren't we? I mean, let's get through the playoffs first. I know we got a long time to go. We got, you know, a little while to go before we get to the playoffs, but I would prioritize the Champions League, absolutely. I mean, they got the shield. You know, it's like they got the shield, so do they need to win? That's not a priority right now if you've already won one. Imagine saying that the supporter shield is not a priority for the Philadelphia Union because they already won it. Champions League for sure, and that's going to be early in the year, we think. I don't know what the schedule is going to be like. U.S. Open Cup, you would love to win that one too. I still think they can win that. I would say Champions League is priority one. Priority number two is getting at least home field advantage for the first or second round of the playoffs for sure. The shield is whatever. And then the Open Cup is priority number three, I think. They're going to have to build depth next year for sure. I mean, they're going to be playing a lot of games, a lot of different stuff that's meaningful. Jared says, Jared, who was on with Mike, who got on with Mike and tried to fight the good fight the other day on Thursday. He says, what are the odds when 2016 rolls around that Mike misses trying to push the World Cup only because it's the only relevant thing to talk about that summer? No, I'm not salty. Why would you ask that? Yeah, it's funny. Like, I was joking with Eitan because, you know, I think the last time I went, you know, I was on with like Glenn and Ike, like 2014. I think I was on with Glenn and somebody else in 2010 because it's like, you know, they have that one week every summer where nothing's going on and like nobody gives a shit about the Phillies. And it's like, well, is soccer going to make it in America? Blah, blah, blah. They have the same fucking soccer conversation every time. But, you know, oddly enough, I don't even think that Mike dislikes soccer. I don't think he's a soccer hater. I've heard him name drop like Giorgio Canaglia and Franz Beckenbauer on the show before. I think he's somebody who appreciates the sport and followed it a little bit growing up. I don't think he hates it. Same way, I don't know if he actually hates hockey or he just has a thing with Flyers fans at this point because it's become such a complex, you know. Again, it's just about playing the hits. I don't know if he truly dislikes hockey and soccer. I don't think he does. It's just he gets frustrated because it's like you're in this formula where you got to talk about the Eagles and you got to play the hits, and that's what radio is in this town, you know. So, Super Wentz says, "Do you think it's possible we ever see a full 11 of all homegrown players?" I was thinking maybe like a first round cup game versus the Pittsburgh Riverhounds. You could see a lineup of Freeze, Craig Real, Turner, Paxton Aronson, Sullivan, Fontana. God, I mean, I guess you could. I mean, if Mark McKenzie's back there, he would be another one. I just don't. I mean, it would be a great
storyline, like an article, you know, everybody would go crazy on Twitter. Well, look at what the union are doing. I don't know. But, you know, it's not like, I don't think it's practical. I don't think anybody ever said that the Academy is going to be your only source of, it would be cool. It'd be cool if they could do it. It'd be fun if they could do it for sure. But the practicality of doing that, you're never supposed to only traverse one avenue anyway, you know? So they could very easily do that. Let me see, how many homegirls do they have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. They could probably pull it off next year. I mean, it'd probably have to come the year after, though. I mean, it depends, because, you know, then you have to sell off these some of these homegrown guys, too. I don't know if you'd ever get to the point where you would have 11 of them on the team at the same time. Eric says, as a Supporters Shield winner, will the union be the first team invited to the Joe Biden White House? No, they would have to win the MLS Cup, I guess. Maybe they win it. Wouldn't that be something or something? You know, if they won MLS Cup, well, who would they? Well, let me think. When is MLS Cup? It's in December, right? So Biden would be in by January, we think, as long as there's no funny business going on here. That's the most political I'll ever get on the podcast. I guess they would get into, yeah, because they're not. Did Trump even host MLS teams in the White House? Jesus Christ, I don't think that any of them wanted to go anyway, did they? I mean, the Eagles didn't even go down there. So they could quite possibly be. Wouldn't that be funny? Wouldn't that be the most like apropos thing of all time? Joe Biden, who caused me and you and a lot of people to miss Sebastian Latou's first goal in Philadelphia Union history because of the Secret Service was at fucking Lincoln Financial Field. We were stuck outside of the gates for 40 minutes waiting to get in. If he, who caused all of that stress and nonsense on us 10 years ago, if he ended up being in the White House when the union won MLS Cup, and then we could, you know, send the team down there, and that would be the ultimate irony, wouldn't it? And then we could all share the picture of Biden wearing his union jacket from 2010 or whatever. Wouldn't that be something else? Imagine the Philadelphia Union at the White House and playing in the Champions League. It still really hasn't even sunk in. If we're being quite honest, the Philadelphia Union, the Champions League. Maybe we'll have the vaccine by then, and maybe we'll have a full house for Philadelphia Union versus Saprissa in the Champions League knockout or Champions League group stages. Philadelphia Union versus Pachuca, Cruz Azul, Club America. It's something else, man. I might have to rejoin the beat if that's the case. That's it for the show. My favorite song off of Illmatic is Life's a Bitch, so I'm going to play 30 seconds of that only as we end the podcast, because I don't want to get sued. I think you get sued if you play more than like 30 seconds of a song, so we're going to play 30 seconds of Life's a Bitch, and then you die, and then you win the Supporters Shield.
I'm saying that's what this is all about, right? Clothes, bank rolls, and holes, you know what I'm saying? Yo, then what, man? What?
Visualizing the realism of life in actuality. Fuck who's the baddest, the person's status depends on salary. And my mentality is money orientated. I'm destined to live the dream for all my peeps who never made it. Cause yeah, we were beginners in the hood as Bible sinners. But something must have got in us, cause all of us turn to sinners. Now some resting in peace and some are sitting in San Quentin. Others such as myself are trying to carry on tradition. Keeping the sweat for us and speak at a Western society. Cause it provides...